You're listening to The Training Dummies. With Rob.
By the way, every time you've ever been beaten by a hunter.
And Daryl.
That was actually me.
Greetings and welcome to episode 191 of The Training Dummies, recorded December 28th, 2017. My name is Rob, and anytime you've ever been beaten by a warlock, that was me. Because that's what I'm doing. I'm playing Hearthstone, playing warlock, and I just hit rank 9 tonight. What do you think about that, Daryl? Yeah, dude, seriously.
Yeah, I think that calls for that. That sounds awesome.
So, yeah, it's a Hearthstone episode, and we did one recently that was special, but now here's a real one, so... tonight, if you can give me a warm Training Dummies welcome, we are going to have special guest, Twitch streamer Majedeath, come and talk about Hearthstone.
Hey there, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, man. I got a little bit of anxiety. I was playing some Hearthstone a minute ago, and you came in to spectate, and I actually won 2 games in a row and bumped myself down to rank 9. So we're doing the
you
thing.
You did. You were, awesome. you were playing Control Warlock with the best of them there.
Yeah, so there's a... I feel like sometimes I play too quickly and I make bad choices, and I don't know if that's a reflection of my real life, but but that's what I'm doing. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do with streaming and gaming and Blizzard and Hearthstone?
Sure. So, like I'm sure you guys, lifelong geek and computer nerd, dating all the way back to my first computer, the Commodore 64.
Nice.
It's such a warm and fuzzy memory. Then, you know, graduating to the Nintendo and Sony gaming consoles as we get closer. But as far as like Blizzard goes, I think my first introduction to Blizzard games was Warcraft 1, the RTS, and then Diablo. And Diablo still is like just an awesome game. I love that game, and I try and find time for it, but man, it's just there's so many good games with Blizzard now, as you guys know, that it's difficult to find time for everything. But
it's an embarrassment of riches, man.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But I guess really getting into like the whole Blizzard community and all that started with World of Warcraft when a buddy of mine told me that I should come try it out because he was playing, and then I got hooked, and then they stopped playing, and then you just kind of try to start networking from there. As far as like Hearthstone goes, though, I only started playing that about a year ago. It was actually March of 2016, so almost you're coming up on 2 years because they were doing cross promotion. You know, they do, you know, play our one game to get something in a different game.
Yeah, they're good at stuff.
So,
like
thanks for the gateway drug there, Blizzard. I really appreciate that. So
first hit's free, right?
Yeah. So it was like I was playing some Heroes of the Storm, and they had a mount or something if you played some games in Hearthstone, and I think they did something with WoW as well, and I'd never been a card game player before, but the game I just really liked it because it was simple enough for me to get my head around. I had tried to get my head around Magic the Gathering way back in my younger days, but I just didn't get it. But this was great, and I was just like really excited about it. And I went to BlizzCon 2016. And was telling people, you know, hey, Hearthstone, it's great. You should be playing it. And they were like, yeah, it looks cool, but I just don't know where to begin. And so, you know, a lot of people said, you know, if you're really excited about this game and you could show me how to play, you know, maybe I'd get excited. And so that's what spurred on starting to stream. And so getting back from BlizzCon, I started right before Thanksgiving last year, and I've been streaming ever since. And I've gotten, and with the idea of trying to get better and trying to help other people get better. And I feel like it's worked because I hit Legend for the first time in September. And I've had
amazing. Yeah.
And I've had a number of other people who've come to the channel, and they, you know, they've picked up some things, and they've told me they've gotten new high ranks because of the things they saw that I was playing or my thought process on playing and that sort of thing. So,
well, I can confirm. Yeah, like awesome. You spectated my game, and I jumped up to maybe the highest rank that I've ever hit in Hearthstone before. So I can confirm that you have the magic touch.
Nice.
So that's my life story, or that part of my life condensed down into fairly brief synopsis.
Cliff notes.
Yes.
All right. Well, I don't have any other questions. Rob, do you?
No, man. Let's talk some Hearthstone.
All right.
This is Nick from The Torn and the Goblin and WoW Talk, and you're listening to The Training Dummies with Rob and Daryl. Ancestors watch over you.
All right. If you have any questions or comments or just want to find out what we are doing, we are active on Twitter at Training Dummies. Rob is at Rob Copeland. And myself, Daryl, is at Daryl _TTD.
Welcome to my end.
I love playing Hearthstone.
Pull up a chair by the hearth.
Garrosh!
What I do in my off time is my own business.
Boys, look who it is! Rexar!
Edwin got me to play Hearthstone once. It was a bit fantastic for my tastes.
Ha! Find a seat if you can!
I can send Varian to his death as many times as I want!
Oh, I love this part.
It's good to see you again.
What kind of game allows Garrosh to order me around? It's absurd.
By the way, every time you've ever been beaten by a hunter, that was actually me.
Busy night, but there's always room for another.
All right, Hearthstone. The game I love to hate.
Let's see if I can say it right this time. Kobolds and Catacombs. Did it. Yes. All right, Mage, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? What are your thoughts? New expansion? Is it good because it's new, or is there something stand out about it?
Well, I would say that anytime you get new content into the game, it's a good thing. And then the question is, you know, what comes of it? And I've been pretty impressed with Kobolds and Catacombs since it came out. It's been out now. It's been 3 weeks tonight, actually, mm-hmm. that it's been out.
Nice.
And so there's been all kinds of experimentation and stuff, and there's still a lot to be discovered, I think, as far as decks and how you play them and what cards are good and what cards aren't good. But we definitely have a pretty strong idea already of what's powerful and what's not. I think the standout actually piece of this was the dungeon run mode, which is absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we will talk about that in some detail, but I've bought all the single player content, the adventures that have happened up until this point, even ones from before I had started playing, went back mm-hmm. and got them.
Yeah.
But this is just it has the most replay value, and I think it's actually like the best content when it comes to I want to try and get a little bit better at the game, and so I don't quite want to play against other players yet, and so I think this does a good job of helping you in that regard, whereas I don't necessarily think adventure mode to this point could do that. So I think it's just absolutely fantastic.
Well, let's talk about dungeon runs then for a minute. I'm 100% on board with you. I feel like anybody, I can hand this to one of my kids, I can hand mm-hmm. it to my wife, and just say, here you go. And, you know, with a little bit of explanation, there's nothing holding you back. There's no, like, well, what cards do you own? And what, you know, do you mm-hmm. have these? And have you crafted this? And have you done that? It's just literally, like, choose your own adventure thing that you just dive into. I know the RNG can be a little limiting depending on what treasures and traits and all that stuff you get, but I think Dungeon Run is probably my favorite thing in Hearthstone ever. Daryl, what would you say?
It's a thing in Hearthstone. I don't know. I've done a few of them. I think
watch your mouth, Daryl.
Yeah, well, I'm not in the same thoughts as you guys on this anyway. I've beat the sixth boss once, I think, maybe five, a couple times. I think I've died on the third one even before, because you know
I've died on the second boss once.
Yeah, oh yeah, I've definitely.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
Nice.
There's been a couple times you just get wrecked, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're like one of those, you know, there's like some priest guy who just keeps healing himself up. And
oh,
like,
actually, is that the second? Like, well, okay, it was that healing guy.
Well, it's random, so.
Yeah. Anyway, he's the one who whooped me early. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's all right, I guess. I just haven't gotten into it, I guess, to play it a lot. I'll get there eventually, maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. We'll see.
So the thing with Dungeon Run, though, is that you can, I don't know, some of the classes, to me, are way easier than the other ones. So mm-hmm. if you enjoy, I don't know, I had anything that could play Jades, I had it a very easy time with, and then anything that where you could just kind of latch on to a theme, like the C'Thun stuff or the Jade stuff, like you can kind of tear through it a little bit easier. So I don't know. Mage, what do you think about the different classes?
There's definitely, I've had some when you can get deck synergy offered to you and you pick it and get, like, you know, you basically, you beat a boss and you get to add cards to your deck. If you can actually get a theme of cards, you know, four or five, six times, you're going to be doing very well towards the end of that run because of the synergy. And I think that's one of the reasons I really like Dungeon Run, is because it kind of teaches you about deck building. And one thing I really struggled with early on, and I still do, is how to build a deck. And I definitely feel better now than I ever did. But I, from a newer player standpoint, I like the idea of Dungeon Runs because, one, you start out with this base deck, and it's the same base deck every time you play that class, every time. And so, like, if I play Hunter, I'm going to have the same 10 Hunter cards to start with every time I play Hunter.
Uh-huh.
And then,
yeah.
And then I can customize it based on the cards that I'm offered. And I can see, you know, you get rewarded by picking synergy, you know, cards that are that you know are synergistic with one another, and then you can see how that pays off, or it's a very low pressure situation to experiment and say, I want to see what this looks like if I go too much in one direction, or if I, you know, just kind of do a hodgepodge of things. But that's the thing I like about it, the fact that you don't have to have the cards. The fact that it's different bosses every time, it can be frustrating when you're not offered those synergies or the like treasures and passives that you want, but it's still quite a bit of fun. I've managed to complete 5 of the 9 classes so far, but I know there were people that have already gotten through all 9 classes, gotten the card back, you know, completed completed and beat all 8 bosses with all 9 classes already. And that's like all they did for the first, you know, week or two of the expansion. And
I know someone like that.
I'm raising my hand right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually didn't really touch the ladder at all. I was having so much fun in Dungeon Runs that I just kind of, like, you know, went through and kind of knocked out one class at a time until I was done, got them all.
Yeah, I like that it's low pressure. I like that, you know, you can kind of, and because there's no rope timer, you know, if you get distracted,
you don't
have to focus necessarily as much, or the stakes aren't as high as if you're playing on the ladder. So there's just a lot I like about it.
I just realized, in case somebody doesn't know, the Dungeon Run is a single player mode where there's a pool of dozens of random bosses, and you,
it's like 43 or 48, yeah, something 40 like some that.
Odd, yeah.
Oh, really? Wow.
And you go up against 8 bosses, and they start from easy to extremely ridiculously hard, and you just pick a class, and after each round, you are given little buckets of cards to choose from, and they kind of label them with, you know, with what the theme of it is, you know, death rattles or battle cries or secrets, or, you know, so you're going through and, you know, let's say you pick Druid. Well, it'll say beasts. And so you decide, well, all right, I want to go put everything into beasts. So you start picking these. After you beat a boss, you can pick the beasts, or you can pick spells, or you can, you know, so you start to kind of build your own deck and add more and more and more to it, until you, by the time you get to the last boss, you have, you know, a full, you know, a regular full-blown deck to go with. And each boss has different abilities, double battle cries or double death rattles, or they make you take your top two cards off of your deck every time it's their turn. You know, there's all these crazy weird twists to it. So yeah, that's kind of what the dungeon run's all about. Do you think I missed anything there?
No, I think you covered it.
Yeah, I forgot. Like, in case some people hadn't even touched it yet, it's a free mode. You don't need to do anything. You don't need to have any of the cards for the expansion. All you got to do is load the game up and go into the solo adventure and choose Dungeon Run under Kobolds and Catacombs. And I strongly recommend it. I feel like it's helped me out a ton. The funny thing is that I came back into ladder and I was just like, holy crap, I don't even know what's going on here. I don't know what the meta is. I don't know what I have. I know I've got a ton of legendaries. I opened up, you know, like 140 some odd packs, and I got a pretty good haul. I felt like I was opening legendaries every, you know, 15, 20 packs or so. And so I had a pretty good haul. And then Daryl had the opposite experience, I think, that I had.
I had like the bare minimum, I swear.
Oh.
It was like 39. There you go. Yeah, so there's a pity timer when you're opening packs, and it's per card set. So the last set was the Frozen Throne. This one's Kobolds and Catacombs. You know, there was Journey to Un'Goro. If you're opening cards from that set, you're guaranteed to get one legendary every time you open 40 packs from a specific set. So, Mage, did you do pretty well with your legendaries? Or
I did pretty well. I opened about 200 packs, and we got a legendary weapon, which is one of the big kind of new legendary cards in this set. You got it just by logging in, mm-hmm. and then you're guaranteed a legendary in the first 10 packs, mm-hmm. of when you open cards from an expansion. And then after that, then the regular pity timer of 40 packs is in there. So I think I actually opened, I got a Lunith. The mage weapon was the one I got for logging in. And then I got one on my very first pack. And then I proceeded to not get another one until almost 40 packs.
Oh, later. Gosh. Oh,
yeah, man, that's brutal.
It's so I think I averaged in the 200 packs, I think I averaged about one every 24 or 25 packs is how it ended up going. And didn't necessarily get all the ones I was hoping for, but I did get quite a few of them. And I actually just bought 40 packs with some Christmas money here this week.
Ooh, nice.
And I opened up four legendaries in 40 packs.
Oh wow! Nice.
So, that's awesome. I'd take that.
So I'll take that.
Well, that kind of brings us into a couple of the things that maybe that were not thumbs up for you. You talked about the legendary weapons being kind of the new cool thing, but turns out that's not necessarily where the power was in this expansion. You want to talk about that a little bit?
No, I would say that there are definitely some weapons that seem like they are pretty powerful. The mage weapon is seeing a lot of play. The warlock weapon, Skull of Minari, is seeing a lot of play,
mm-hmm.
as well. But it is the epic cards in this set that have been really make or break when it comes to deck building. And the very first one that people discovered was this neutral 7-mana card called the Corridor Creeper. And it's 7-mana, 5/5, but every time a minion dies while this card is in your hand, it reduces its cost by one. And so there are points with some of these decks where you can actually end up playing a Corridor Creeper for 0 mana by about turn 4.
Yeah, it's silly. Yeah.
And so you've got this, and then it's just kind of this arms race, right? Where you're trying to get the Corridor Creeper in your opening hand and then you're trying to kill all these little minions as quickly as possible. So then you could throw these Corridor Creepers out there in addition to what you'd normally play on your turn. And it's been crazy. And pretty much every deck after the first couple of days, pretty much every deck threw Corridor Creepers in their deck. And a lot of them still have them in there, actually, as of right now. You've got that. You've got Void Lords for Warlock were really good, which I opened 259 packs now after these packs earlier this week, and I didn't open a single Void Lord.
Yep. I had to craft mine.
I ended up crafting them, but you got these Void Lords that are pretty much a staple in all the Warlock decks. You've got Call to Arms, 4-mana spell for Paladin that recruits 3 minions that are 2 or less mana cost right onto the game board. And there's just the Spiteful Summoner is a neutral minion as well that pulls a spell from your deck and gives you a random minion of the same cost as that spell. I mean, there's just, it goes on and on that, you know, you could, they're not as expensive to craft because it's only 400 dust instead of 1600 dust, like a legendary, but you do have to have 2 of them probably. And so it ends up being if there's not the protection like the legendary. So
right.
They implemented the system where once you got a legendary, you can't get another that same legendary until you have all the legendaries. There isn't that same protection on epics. So you can get the same epic over and over and over again. And like, I still have 3 epics from the set. I don't even have a single copy of, even after crafting the Void Lords, which I didn't have any copies of. So
yeah, I was kind of frustrated because there was a couple, like, you start to go through, and I'm linking Daryl, like, hey, man, this deck's awesome. Like, hey, you should check this out. Like, you should, you know, and I'm like, and he's like, don't have that, don't have that, don't have that. I'm like, yeah. And I started looking at it, and I had to craft the Void Lords. I had to craft the cubes. I had to craft, like, all this stuff. I'm just like, what the? This is a hot mess, man. Like,
I crafted a cube. I crafted both the Void Lords. I luckily got the Corridor Creepers and the Call to Arms, but, yeah. It's difficult, but I mean, those really are kind of the linchpins to a lot of the main decks that people are running right now. Especially, I mean, you can probably get by with them at some of the lower levels, but once you start getting, you know, in the low teens to around 10 or higher, you're going to have a hard time progressing if you don't have them, because they're just so key to what the decks are trying to do.
So wouldn't you say historically that like the legendaries have been like the important cards and the epics have been kind of some more of the whimsical, I guess, for lack of a better term?
Well, I know like in the arena setting, they've always said like the epic cards for are not that great. And it kind of has felt like that this year too with Un'Goro and even Knights of the Frozen Throne, where there were maybe 1 or 2 standouts, but I mean, even there, like a lot of the really powerful cards, like I'm thinking about the last 2 expansions, some of the most powerful cards have been, you know, common or rare cards. And this time it just, while there are some pretty good cards in the common and rare slot, it seems like more than any other set that I can remember, there really is a power jump in those epic cards.
Well, and like I was saying, you know, I'm trying to tell Daryl where I'm having luck at, and I'm linking him these decks, and it's like, if you don't have these cards, then they're not cheap to make, right?
No. Right.
Like, who's sitting on thousands of dust that's not a full-time streamer or, you know, somebody who's just got money to dump into it? I've got, you know, I feel like I generally have enough dust to make what I need, but then, but when you start, you know, going down this checklist of like, well, if you're going to play Paladin, you need this, if you're going to play Warlock, you need this, and it's like all these you know, class specific cards, they're not, you know, I know the Corridor Creeper's neutral, but like some of these are like, you kind of have to commit to one archetype at this point or one class at this point.
Yeah, I think one of the real big advantages of Mean Streets of Gadgetzan, which was the expansion that came out a year ago at this time, was I loved the tri-class cards, because while they weren't fully neutral, they weren't class specific, and so like if you pulled
the Eye of Blackpaw.
You actually got it. That was a legendary card, but you got to use it in 3 different decks. You know, 3 different classes could use Eye of Blackpaw. And I really liked that, and I think that was one of the best things they ever did. And it's interesting now because, like, starting with Un'Goro, they're now introducing less neutral legendaries, and they're offering, you know, two legendaries per class. And so, like, it was quest cards and then a legendary minion for each class. And then it was a hero card in Knights of the Frozen Throne plus a legendary card or a legendary minion. And now this time it's weapon plus a legendary minion. They're going less neutral. And so you do kind of then have to commit to a particular class or a particular, even within that, you almost have to specifically pick a certain deck or a certain play style, because a lot of times they don't work. It's not a universally good legendary like Tyrion, where you just throw it in anywhere in any kind of deck pretty much. It's one where, okay, I suddenly now have to play a certain way in order to really get value out of this legend.
What would you say is your favorite deck or archetype going on right now?
Well, the deck that I had the most fun playing was this big spell Dragon Priest deck. And you actually went up against...
Is that the one that I just destroyed?
Yes, it was, actually. So there was a pro player named Satellite who basically put together a Dragon Priest deck that had four spells in it. And it had two Free from Amber, an 8-mana card, and then two Mind Controls, which is a 10-mana card. And then it used a Spiteful Summoner, which is the neutral, a new neutral in this expansion that says when you play this minion, randomly pull a spell from your deck, and then you get a minion at that same cost. So if there's only two 8-mana spells and two 10-mana spells, you're going to get an 8-mana minion or a 10-mana minion. And it's a lot of fun when you can just throw down on turn six a 4/4 minion that then suddenly gives you a Deathwing or gives you a Yashiraj or just some ridiculous card that you have no business playing on turn six. And it's gotten a little less popular over the last week because of some of the other decks that have popped up, but it was fairly easy to play. It had early minions, so you just played a bunch of minions that had dragons in it. So you had the dragon synergies that Priest has had in the past and now are having a little bit again. And then you just cheated out this really ridiculously really big turn on turn six, or this Grand Archivist, which is an 8-mana card that will pull one of those spells from your deck and then play it immediately at the end of your turn. So you either get a free from Amber card, or you just mind control a minion on your opponent's side of the board and get it right.
Or you just play my Warlock deck and they concede because you just...
Yeah.
I had a couple things go my way, but yeah.
Yeah, you showed him that the power of the Void Lords plus Nazoth plus Gul'dan, and there's only so much you can do when you... Well, the downfall of that deck is you're not really running any removal. The only removal from that deck is the minions themselves or the AoE from the Duskbreaker Dragon. So it's a three damage AoE to everything on the board. So if you don't get that, you can get into a world of hurt when your opponent's playing all these huge taunt minions.
So I'm going to ask you this question because I know I always kind of go down the list myself. But what one when you queue up and you lock into a game and you get in there, what one class right now do you see on the other side where you just got no?
It has been and continues to be Priest. Oh my God, there is not a worse feeling in the world than seeing a Priest.
Because you don't know. There's, like you were saying earlier, there's several different variations of Priest, and you don't know what you're going to get, and they're all nasty.
You've got Dragon Priest. You've got a couple iterations of Dragon Priest that are both really good. You've got Big Priest, which is kind of a holdover from Knights of the Frozen Throne that was really good, and you've got Raza Kazakus Anduin Priest, which was really good for most of Knights of the Frozen Throne, and basically is considered right now to be the strongest deck in the meta. And it's the worst part about Priest, in my opinion, is that Raza, Kazakus, Anduin kill you from 30 plus health with Prophet Velen and Mind Blast and all that. Because part of it's they're taking your cards. Part of it is, you know, they've got board clears and removals for days. Yet they should only have one of them because you only get to run one copy to take advantage of Raza and Kazakus's battle cries. But yet somehow they just always seem to have them.
Daryl, what about you? What class do you see that just makes you want to concede?
Oh, I don't know. I don't play it. I haven't played enough to see one that makes me just want to concede.
I feel like at one point you would have said Jade, but I'm not.
Well, yeah, I haven't seen a lot of Jade right now, but yeah, I still hate all the Jade cards. I can't wait till they're gone.
Yeah, a couple months they'll be out.
Yeah,
first expansion next year, and they're getting rotated.
Yeah, because I wasn't playing for that expansion, so I don't have any Jade cards, so I can't even take advantage and try and play them. Because I did a search for Jade one time, and then one card came up. So
oh
yeah, so it's like
kind of before you really committed
to yeah that. So it wasn't even an option to try and play it myself, and then anytime I played against a Jade Druid, I'd just get destroyed. Like it's just ridiculous. I do have a couple questions here because I heard some terms that I didn't understand.
Okay,
what does Big Priest mean, and what does Highlander Priest mean? I have no idea.
You know what the big thing is? I was playing that a while back.
But I don't remember.
So Big Priest is basically a deck that runs six minions. All of them, with the exception of Barnes, are 8 mana or higher mana cost. And what you're doing is... Basically, the ideal state with that is you get Barnes by turn 4, you play Barnes, and he gives you a 1-1 copy of a minion that's in your deck, a 1-1 copy of one of those 8, 9, or 10 mana cards. And then Priest has a bunch of ways to resurrect a minion that's died, and so once you kill that 1-1 version, you resurrect a full-sized version of it. So,
oh, okay.
So for 4 mana, Eternal Servitude, you summon a you discover and resurrect a minion that's died this game. So suddenly, if I Barnes'd out a 1-1 Yashiraj and you kill it, then for 4 mana, I can res a 10 mana card and get another copy of it in my deck or on the battlefield immediately.
You're just trying to cheat out some very powerful high cost minions way before they should actually be on the board.
And then there's ways at 6 mana to get a 5/5 version of those same minions as well. And then you're just trying to cheat them out early, and then you just try and resurrect them over and over again for less cost than what they are to actually just play them out of hand.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And so it ends up being an exercise in frustration because, I mean, they're getting these minions for way cheaper than they should. And then they've got, because they only have, you know, 6 minions in their deck, the other 24 cards are spells. And those spells are ways to remove cards, you know, most of them are ways to remove minions from your side of the board.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Or to bring back the ones that you've killed.
Yeah, or bring back the ones
that... It's annoying. Yeah. So annoying.
And then Highlander Priest is basically a term from, I think, Magic that basically says you're running you're running a single version of a card in the deck. So there's no duplicate card in your deck. So it's...
Oh, okay.
And so from,
well,
from
that Priest, show, the was it the show The Highlander, where it was like there can only be one.
Yeah. So
is that it is?
Yeah, okay. It could be from that. But it's just a referring to a single copy, so it's a 30 card deck of all one version or one copy of each card.
Okay.
There's a couple of cards that that have really powerful effects if there's no other duplicates in your deck. And it actually says that. It says, if there are no other duplicate cards in your deck, this card gives you a... Your hero power is now free.
Yes.
Or...
Raza and then Kazakus getting to create a potion. Create a custom potion if there's no duplicates in your deck.
Yeah, so that's the...
Right. Okay.
Kind of the... Yeah. Good question, though. Because I know, like... If you know, you just throw these terms around and like other people are like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like you kind of led into a little bit about the ladder. Do you want to talk about the ladder a bit? And or Daryl, did you have some questions about ladder? I think you kind of wrote this up.
Well, sure. Like, yeah, what if when I was able to play Quest Rogue, I got to 12 and that was the best I did there. But then they nerfed Quest Rogue. And then what did I hit next? I think I got 13 one time with... I think it was a control warlock last expansion. But now I swear I can't get to 17. And I'm doing that same control warlock, like the one with the void lords and the weapon. But what have you found to be the best way to climb the ladder?
So I mean, I like to try and find a deck that I enjoy playing. And then, you know, usually I'm looking at and trying to get a gauge of what other people are playing and or what they consider to be, you know, some of the better classes, you know, and I basically just try out a bunch of different decks until I find one I like to play. And then I just try and play every day with the deck to get more familiar with it. Because I think the biggest thing about trying to progress up the ladder is knowing a deck. You know, what its strengths are, what its weaknesses are, what ways can you win a game? You know, a lot of times a deck's going to have a primary way to win a game and then maybe a secondary way to win a game. And you need to know what those are. And at the same time, it's also about knowing, you know, or being familiar with some of the decks that your opponent is going to be playing as well. So when you queue into Priest, having some idea of what kind of priest you might be playing. And there are some classes where it's like, okay, I see, trying to think of a class that maybe only has a single archetype right now, if you were to queue into a rogue on ladder, it's probably going to be a tempo rogue. And so you kind of know, if you're familiar with tempo rogue, you kind of know the cards that are in that deck. And then you know what ways that it has to kind of, you know, what its strengths are and what its weaknesses are. And then, you know, you then can figure out based on your deck and what your opponent is playing, how best to approach the game to give you the best chance to win. And it's all about actually playing the games and whether it be, you know, you can do some reading about it. You know, there's various sites in that and you can watch streamers do it as well to kind of get their thoughts and perspective on strengths and weaknesses and decks. I think a lot of times that's where I get some inspiration as far as what decks to try, but then I kind of have to try and play them myself to get an idea of whether or not I'm going to like playing them for the long haul. But once you try out a couple and then you start to find one that you kind of like, hey, this is fun. I enjoy playing this. I'm having a little bit of success with this too. So I'm going to keep playing. And then I just try and play every day because it seems like if I go a couple days and then try and come back to it, even a deck that I'm familiar with, there's some rust there and I don't play as well in the first few games.
I think you said a couple of key things there that's helped me out is that I've kind of committed to this particular version of this control lock that I'm doing. And And the more that I played with it, the more you start to see things, you know, like you said, you queue into a paladin and I kind of know right now what paladins are doing. They're being really aggressive. They're doing the aggro thing. They're doing the call to arms. They're putting a ton of stuff on the board. So I'm trying to, I get a feel for, well, do I need to hold on to my AOE? Do I need to hold on to my removal? What else is going to be out there? I don't have to play around Equality Consecrate like I used to, because you're not seeing that as much, you know, like all these, you know, kind of different things that it's an experience thing. It's knowing your deck, but also knowing kind of what, when you, like you said, you see a rogue, you go, okay, I kind of know what's going on here. Or, you know, they play that Kingsbane that rogue weapon, you go, okay, I see what's going on here. And you got as a warlock, you go, well, I know they're going to try and mill me a little bit, so I have to be careful about tapping now because I don't want to keep too much in my hand. And there's all these little kind of nuances depending on what you're going up against that can really make or break a match.
Just having that knowledge of your deck and what your opponent's probably going to do can change your mulligan. It can change, you know, how, you know, aggressive you are, or how, you know, passive you are in the early game. You know, it can completely change how you play the game in a matchup. And so, yeah, you don't get that experience necessarily by just, without just playing the deck or seeing how the deck plays and the various matchups.
Well, even if you don't have all the cards from all the other decks, a lot of times, like, I'll go to the Disguised Toast or Tempo Storm and look at some of the top tier decks. So like, I'm not really playing a ton of Priest right now, but Priest is doing really well, and it's like a couple of the top, you know, the very top decks. And so at least I know what to expect. Like, you're describing this, the big spell thing earlier. And I know what you're talking about. I know the Spiteful Summoner and the Grand Archivist, and I know what to look for. And it helps me, even though I'm not playing that, it helps me know what to expect or what to look out for. Like we were talking earlier, like, I don't really have to play around silences as much because I know, you know, that deck doesn't run silences. So,
You want to save your Siphon Soul for when he actually uses the Grand Archivist,
or yeah,
he
exactly.
uses the Spiteful yeah. Summoner, and as opposed to, you know, maybe using it on this Cobalt Scalebane or something that's currently out there, which, you know, in some matchups you definitely want to get rid of that thing, but, you know, there could be something even bigger coming. So
yeah, you see something as a threat and you've got a way to remove it right now. But what you can kind of, you know, you can judge whether or not you can hang out for a turn or two and then play a full removal and then really cripple them instead of just taking away one card and now they flood you with a bunch of other stuff. Now you can kind of, I don't know, it's just this constant back and forth. There's a lot of thinking involved.
Yeah, it's way more, I mean, you can really get down kind of the rabbit hole with thinking about it. And I didn't realize just how much of a, kind of a chess match it basically is when you're playing, and until you start kind of immersing yourself in all the kind of the thinking behind and the strategy behind it.
So Daryl, are you doing much ladder right now? I know a lot of times just for the sake of clearing out quest logs, we tend to trade wins and stuff like that. But what are you looking for from Hearthstone right now?
I don't even know. Like, I haven't played much this past week just because I was visiting my parents. I just got back yesterday, late yesterday. So I haven't, other than, you know, that one or two matches with you yesterday just to clear up a quest, I haven't played much in the past week. So as for ladder, like, I've been trying. I'd like to advance higher on it. I'm just struggling right now to get anywhere. I know you told me you used that same deck basically that I'm using, and you got to 15 in an afternoon almost with really easily, and I'm sitting there going, man, I'll get to 3 stars on 18 and then lose a couple like immediately.
That back and forth is like, yeah,
and it's like, man, it's just, so I don't know, I'd like to do better. I just don't know how to do better without investing 8 hours a day is what I'm hearing you guys say.
Yeah, you're wanting to play over breaks and lunches, and, you know, I think like you and I, for a long time, when we sit down at our computer in the evening and we're going to play a game, Hearthstone's not what I fire up, right?
No, it's not.
It's WoW or Heroes, or, you know, it's like, so you're full on like mobile work, break time, lunch, bathroom guy on playing Hearthstone. So do you feel like ladder is harder now than it was before?
For me?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's always been difficult, I think. I know I had a really good string with that quest rogue, and the main reason I played that is because that's the legendary card I ended up with when I opened a few packs.
That was a good one to get for a
very long seriously, time. Man.
Yeah, and I was,
well, which is why it got nerfed. So.
Well, yeah, and I was able to do well with it. But yeah, I don't know if it's any more difficult now. It's just, I think it is, as I can't get any farther, so yeah.
Well, is it more difficult, or is it just a brand new expansion, brand new meta, brand new cards, and there's a lot of people that are immersing themselves more, and maybe you're behind that curve a little bit?
Oh, probably.
Because you have the... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, Rob, it's interesting that you asked that question, because actually I was watching Trump, who is one of the kind of longtime streamers of Hearthstone, and mm-hmm. somebody was asking him about this. Is Hearthstone harder? And he's like, I don't really know how to answer that. But he said, one thing I will say is the decks right now are more skill intensive than he thinks they've ever been.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And as a result, it can be harder to play because you've got so many things going on, you know, with all these minions and spells and different effects that can happen.
Yeah, the defile math
element that can come from a lot of these cards as well, that, you know, you throw all this in the blender and you have just this experience that can be really, really skill testing. And if it's not something that you've grown accustomed to, like I'm hardly an expert at it, but I could definitely see how it's like, it's difficult to wrap your head around.
So I know Daryl has the cards for one of the more popular top tier decks right now. I know you've got the everything for the cube warlock.
Yeah, I do. And that's the one I'm trying to play.
That's the thing about that deck, though, is that there is so many. The reason I went with the other version of the control lock that I'm doing right now over the cube lock is because the cube lock is awesome, but there is just so many ways to do it and so many ways to screw up that I feel like I don't want to think that hard when I'm doing it. I want to play smart and I want to make good choices, but I don't want to play at that level right now. Like I think I can, mm-hmm. and I think I would be okay with it, but I also don't want to have to, you know, to play at that. Like it's supposed to be fun for me, and half the time I'm playing on my mobile and making those kinds of choices. And, you know, when you got kids yelling at you and, you know, stuff like that, it's just like, it's not, it kind of sucks the fun out a little bit. And I just want to be able to play a little, maybe like a successful, but slightly more basic version of that. So that's where I landed at.
Q-Block is a really difficult deck to actually play. And the reason for that is it isn't just the straightforward of I got minions and I'm just running them at your face until you're dead. It actually requires you to manipulate your hand and the board in such a way that you're creating a scenario where you have a certain set of cards in your hand that you can then burst down an opponent from a large life total. And trying to juggle hand size and you know, opponent's minions coming in and your health total and, you know, all this sort of thing and getting the pieces in place so you can do that, it's exceptionally hard. It sounds like, going back to a very popular but very skill testing deck from yesteryear in Hearthstone, Patron Warrior.
Yes.
It sounds a lot like that, where it's one of those decks that if you play it, you can play it really well, and you can make people look really, really bad because you can make these out of control board states. Or in this case, you get this big combo off mm-hmm. and kill them from 25 health. But it's setting up and getting to that point that is the most skill testing aspect of it, and it's not easy, and it takes lots and lots of practice to do.
Okay, I think I linked Daryl a video of it was Tice playing the cube lock, and immediately it was just like, I have those cards. I want to do that. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I know.
I want to too.
I know. I know.
Void Lords.
And I know that Daryl has, you know, what it takes to do that. But I also know me, and I know how Daryl is and how we are. And it's like, well, man, like it kind of breaks you down a little bit after 3, 4, 5 games of like not being able to pull it off. And you're just like, man, forget it. You know, it's not mm-hmm. fun.
Yeah. Those aren't short games either.
And no, they're not.
They're very, I know they're not. They're very focus intense too, because you can't be lackadaisical when you're trying to figure out, you know, setting up your combo. And so then it's just like this mentally exhausted sort of thing. And if you go several games and you're not able to do it, it's just like, ugh.
And you pull it off, and then all of a sudden,
you feel better about yourself.
Priest, yeah. Well, you pull off everything and you're ready, and then this priest plays Mass Dispel, and you're just like, really, man? Like, come on. So so for someone super casual, then do you feel like, my tactic here of taking a slightly easier to pilot deck is better then? What do you recommend to people when they come in and they're like, you know, because then like the number one question people are like, okay, what deck should I play? How do I ladder? I just want to climb ladder. I want to win. What's, you know, and obviously you can't. There's no play this deck and you'll win everything, right?
Right.
There's you got to put in the time, you got to put in the effort. But so what do you say to somebody who is really casual but also wants to be successful?
Well, I think it starts with what cards they have. And I think a lot of times, starting out, you're trying to find decks that have less of the epics and the legendaries, and you're looking for more common and rare decks that basically have most of the deck is that level. And you're looking for ones that basically just, they're called tempo decks, where you're basically picking a card. You're it's like, I've got 2 mana. I'm going to play the best 2 mana minion that's in my hand. Right. And then turn 3 comes and I do the same thing, turn 4, that sort of thing. And I think that's kind of a good way to start. What you want to do is you're trying to do that basically every game, every turn. You know, you're not always going to do that, but that's kind of where I think you start as trying to learn the card game, is just finding a deck that's got, you know, you're a situation where you have minions to play and then you just play them every turn. And then you think about that. Then the next step then is, well, when it's my turn, am I going face every time or am I trading? And then that kind of depends on the deck and how it's built. If it's got a lot of small creatures, you're probably just sending them all to the face. And then when they, you know, kill all your minions, you throw a whole bunch more out there and go face again. And hopefully, you know, you can do that enough times that you kill them before they kill you, that sort of thing. That's aggro or face decks. Or you do play more of a board control sort of game, and which is like Tempo Rogue is that example, where you're trying to play the best minion you can, but then you're trying to, you know, keep control of the board and then still send some damage towards the face, and basically over the course of the game you do enough damage where you're doing more damage to them and eventually killing them before they kill you. But it's usually Hunter is the class that people tend to start with, because those a lot of times you can do a more inexpensive Hunter deck, and it's got a hero power that you just, you know, hit it and you do 2 damage to your opponent's face, and it seems fairly forgiving, and it you learn about beast synergy, and you learn about minion placement and different things like that. So between that and like Zoo Warlock, Zoo Warlock was actually the deck that I learned originally. Again, it's a very inexpensive deck. It does more of the, I want to play the best minion I can, but I also want to try and control the board for several turns until a point when I can just have a big board and then go face and win the game. And that for quite a while there, Zoo Warlock wasn't very good, but it's come back now in Knights of the Frozen Throne and now into Kobolds and Catacombs, to where that's a pretty decent deck too.
I kind of like it when I run up against a Zoo Lock, but like playing a control deck, you have a lot of ways to deal with it. So
as a control, yeah, control decks have lots of ways to handle their opponent's minions. So yeah, mm-hmm. you You probably salivate when you're playing anybody.
I see rogue, I see paladin, I see other warlock, and I'm usually like okay with that, especially because I'm playing a Rin. The crazy meme, like everyone laughed at this card, thought it was such a joke, but essentially what you can do over the course of several turns is earn your way up to a card where you destroy your opponent's entire deck, not their hand, but the cards,
the remaining cards in their deck.
Yeah, and I don't pull it off terribly often, but just having it there all of a sudden, I think it forces people into some decisions that they wouldn't normally make, knowing that they're about to lose all their cards.
It's a similar impending doom that Jade had, where if you take too long to do what it is you're trying to do, you're going to lose the rest of your deck, right?
Yeah, yep.
And that for Jade, it was, I'm going to create these big green men that are, 9-9, 10-10, and 11-11 on the board, and you're just not going to be able to handle them. This is, you're just not going to have any more cards to.
Yeah, that so that version that I'm running is like, I don't know, I felt very good about that. I think Daryl has Rin, don't you?
Yeah, I have Rin, and you linked me that deck you're using, but it has N'Zoth, and yeah, I don't have that card, and that card's only going to be around until the next expansion, so it's not worth 1,600 dust to craft it for.
It's hard to say because that card is so good, especially in that deck. But yeah, I know. I totally understand that. So, Daryl, you have, I don't know if you put this question in here or yeah, why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, okay, yeah. So how often do you change up the deck that you're using to climb the ladder?
So when we're in kind of this new meta where you've got decks changing a lot all the time, where like what's popular and what people are playing on, what my opponents are playing, I'll tend to change it up a fair amount just because I want to try and find some, different decks that I just to try them to see what they're like so that I know how to play against them first. And then just to try and get a stable of this is maybe a deck that I want to play more. But when I'm normally just in a given month, maybe next month or the month after, I'm probably going to stick to one deck and try and go as high as I possibly can.
Oh, okay.
Because that's going to be because, as we talked about before, you the more games you play with a deck, the more you know that deck, what it can do and how to deal with it. But when I hit Legend, it was right after in September we had a card nerf, and so right after the card nerf, It was the spreading plague nerf went from 5 mana to 6 mana,
yeah.
And War Axe got nerfed from 2 mana to 3 mana, and there was several other cards. Murloc War Leader was one too. So I was playing a bunch of decks to get to where I was at like rank 4 or something at that point, and I switched to Evolved Shaman, which was really good right after. It was like one of the first decks that people started playing after the card nerfs. And I got up to rank 1 and then just started losing. And over several days, I lost more games than I won. So I slowly gave back all those games that I had picked up. And I actually went back to rank 3. And if I have several days in a row where I can't get to at least a 50% win rate, then I will try switching something up. And what I eventually did was I switched over to Tempo Rogue and then had an unbelievably great session where I went from low rank 3 to high rank 2. And then the next day I went from 4 stars of rank 2 all the way to Legend in just a winning streak. So you basically just kind of, I think you can kind of feel it. If you're playing game, you don't want to just think about the game that you just played, or maybe the last two games you just played. You want to look at it in kind of a bigger scale. And so I want to have like 10, or I want to have like 10, 15, maybe 20 games where I've probably lost more games than I won before I'm going to start thinking about changing decks. And even then it's like, well, were they blowout losses or were they really close losses where maybe if I'd have done something different, I could have turned it around. And if it's blowout losses, then, you know, maybe then it's time to look at possibly changing the deck. But if it's just really close or there's things I could do differently, then it's just a matter of probably keeping playing the deck that I've been playing.
So right. maybe talk through a little bit about the expectation on hitting certain ranks. Like, do you feel like, I mean, obviously, we've mentioned, it's just a matter of putting in the time. But what do you think's fair to say, like, hey, I want to hit rank 15 this month? Like Michael, like we were saying earlier, I don't know why, but I decided out of nowhere I want to hit rank 10. Well, actually, my goal is rank 15, and then I hit that super easy, and I was like, okay, I want to hit rank 10. And, you know, I hit a couple of very rough patches and kind of wasn't really sure what I wanted to do with some decks, but I kind of stuck with the same deck and pinned it down and ended up pushing through. What do you think's fair for, like, how many matches it should take? Or
I think it's so the higher up the ladder you go, the more games it's going to take you to get from one of those floors to the next one. And, you know, it's really difficult to pin down the exact number of games that it's going to take you to get to one of those floors, because it really is. It's all about, you know, kind of what deck you're playing, what you
win streaks
up against. And, you know, ideally you want to get on a roll where you're actually in the winning streak, so you get the bonus stars, because then you can really climb quickly up the ladder until you get to rank 5. But like, if you have this situation where, you know, you're winning 2 and then you're losing 1, you know, you're not getting any of those bonus stars, so you end up taking, you know, it takes a lot more games to get there. But I think that I think it's like, if you're starting around like rank 20 or so, or maybe 22, 23, something like that. I think if you have made it to rank 15 before, the more times that you hit a rank, the easier it's going to be for you to get to that rank again, is the other thing that you have to realize too. So the first time that you go from, say, 23 to 15, it might take you 50 or 60 games to get there, even though like the minimum number you would need is probably only in the neighborhood of about 20 games or so. But, you know, because of bonus stars and things like that, but, you know, you're probably not going to have, you know, the very first time you do that, you're probably not going to have that good a win rate. And so you're just trying to get a positive win rate. You want to be better than, you want to win more games than you lose. And so I try and look at it more from the standpoint of, am I winning more games than I lose? And then just kind of go from there and try not to focus on the rank as best you can. It is, you know, I think when I tilt the most, or when I start to get, you know, really bad, is when I start focusing on what rank I am. I focused on rank last night because I was at rank 2 and I've seen a lot of friends get to legend this month, and I was like, I really would like to get there. And so I went in and I went 3-11 last night and went from rank 2 to rank 4.
Oh no.
And felt terrible. Felt absolutely terrible. Lost 8 games in a row to end the night and was just like, ugh. So just, you know, I think it's like getting there. It's going to take more games than you think it should. Probably the first time you get to one of the rank 4s, 15, 10, 5. And then it's going to take less number of games every time you make it back there, and to where you're, you know, going to get, you know, your winning rate's going to be why it takes less games. And so I would just focus on trying to get win more games than you lose. And then you just get there. And then if you try and play every day, along with having a win rate of better than 50%, you're going to get to those, you're going to make your goals of whatever rank you're trying to get to. So I dodged the question, kind of.
I didn't say the exact number of games. It's an answer. So
I will tell you this. So the month I hit Legend in September, I played 372 games on ladder. And I will tell you that of those 372 games, over 200 of them were between ranks 5 and 1. Like 250 of those games were in ranks 5 to 1. And jeez. So if you I had been consistently hitting probably rank 2 or rank 3 every month before that for several months. And so it only took me about 100 games to get to rank 5. But that's because I've hit rank 5 a bunch of times. The first time I hit rank 5, I probably was well over 200 games to get to that point. So that's kind of where you're at. You can get to, you know, rank 10. I basically say that, you know, if it takes you 30 games to get to rank 15, it's probably going to take you twice as many games to get to rank 10. And then it's going to take you twice that to get to rank 5. And because that's typically how it ends up going. And so that can kind of start to give you a gauge of the number of games it's going to take you based on how you're currently doing to get to kind of where the next floors are. Cause it tends to double every time you go up from one rank floor to the next.
Well, and then a rank 5 when you lose the bonus win streak, right?
Yes. And so technically you only need to win 25 games to get from rank 5 to Legend. But it never takes just 25 games.
No, I mean, I wouldn't know, but I've watched enough streams.
Yeah. All right, so I have a question that kind of goes back to the cube lock deck that I'm currently trying to play. Like you said, it was there's a lot of skill involved in that deck. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's very, very skill intensive.
So my question becomes then, how do I know when I'm losing because of lack of skill or because RNG has decided to stick it to me? Because that's what it feels like I'm losing most of the time. I'm not getting the cards I need when I need them. So then I think RNG is screwing me over. And it's not my lack of skill on the deck. See, I don't know how to tell the difference.
So when we're talking skill, it's basically meaning what can you do with the cards that you're given, right? Mm-hmm. And it also means like what happened in the mulligan. So what cards did you decide to keep versus maybe what cards should you have kept? And so, you know, that from a skill standpoint, knowing what cards you should keep in the mulligan is a skill, right? But then after that, you don't necessarily have control over what cards you draw when. Mm-hmm. Then the skill comes into how did you manage to handle the board state to set you closer to the point where you're going to do the cube combo, right? You're like, did you set up a scenario where you could play possessed lackey and not die because you were, you know, you had taken a whole bunch of damage versus did you let the board get out of control? And so now you basically have to do whatever you can to survive and you can't play the card that you need to play in order to kind of advance your own win chance. And it's really difficult to know how, you know, what the balancing act is, because there really is, I mean, it starts with the mulligan, but then it's like, well, you don't have control over the cards you draw and you don't have control over what your opponent plays. It's just what did you do? What did you do to try and help you win the game or prevent the other guy from winning the game and keep you in the position where you can still do what you need to do? And with a deck like the cube lock, I think that there's a lot of things that you have to kind of watch for. And it's like, you know, gathering those combo pieces It's about, you know, managing your health total. It's about, you know, all of these things where there are decks that have less of that. Like there are more often than not, like there are decks where you don't have to worry about your hand size because you're not necessarily going to have 8, 9, 10 cards in hand at any point. Right.
Right.
And so that's one skill you don't necessarily have to worry about with some decks that you are going to have to worry about with a control warlock deck or a cube warlock deck. And so that's kind of then that's one less skill that you really have to worry about. You know, you still have to worry about, you know, managing your mana and making sure you're doing the best play you can given what you have available to you. But that's just one more example of something in the cube block that is very skill intensive. There's other decks where you don't necessarily have to say, in order for me to do the thing I need to do, I need to have this card in my hand, right? I have to fill the board with the best minions I can. I have to trade these minions in a way that I keep as much on the board as I can, and then I still push damage to face. So, you know, that's combo decks are really, really difficult because of the fact that they're a combo. You need certain cards in your hand to be able to play them in a certain way so that you can maximize your win opportunity.
Okay.
Joe, do you feel like when you lose, do you just go, man, F this game, RNG stupid, I hate that guy? Or do you look at it and go, oh, man, I could have done this, I should have done this, and you kind of walk away with like a little bit of like better for at least getting, like,
oh, now next time I'm in this situation, maybe I'll defile versus, you know, putting this minion down instead. Or, you know, if I'd waited with my Kobold Librarian, I could have defiled this turn, because then I'd have had a one minion, a one health, a two health, a three health, a four health, that sort of thing.
Excuse me. Sometimes, I guess it depends on how I lose, right? Like if it feels like I can't do anything because I don't have the cards that I need, like even to control the deck, like it's a control deck, and if I'm not getting any of my control cards, then yeah, I sit, when the game's over, all I'm thinking about is, man, RNG got me this time, and there's nothing I could have done. That's how it feels. I don't know, but when there's close games, yeah, I try and think of something I could have possibly done. I think I do anyway. Maybe I don't. Maybe I just blame RNG and rage and go to the next one.
I think that's been a big thing for me. Like, there's definitely times where I'm like wagging my middle finger at the screen, but there's like a lot of times where I go, man, I should have, I could have done this. I could have waited one more turn and then, you know, played the lackey and then packed my own lackey to guarantee I was going to get the Void Lord out, you know, because I knew that they was going to silence, or, you know, there's all sorts of like ways where you're like, I knew better, but I did it anyways. You know, I play, the 2-mana 2/6 that pulls the guy out of their deck.
Dirty
rats. Yeah. Okay. So I played the Dirty Rats. Dude, that is the biggest trap ever, right? Like, I've gotten myself into so much trouble, and every time I knew better, right? I'll pull some thing out of their deck that just kicks my butt for like the next 3 or 4 turns. And I totally knew it and I did it anyways. But it's stuff like that where like I'm starting to learn a lot more restraint. And that's like one of the huge things that's actually making me, I feel like that's the reason why I'm like finally making some progress, is like, is some of the nuance, some of the restraints, some of the, you know, the finer things. I guess I'm just wondering if you're finding yourself in that position, Daryl, where you're walking away going, yeah, I did that and I knew better, but I did it anyways, you know?
I don't know. It feels like I haven't played it in a while now, so I'm not sure how I react. I'm trying to, yeah, I can't remember.
That's really the switch, right? Is when you can look at a game objectively and say, you know, there are games where RNG is just going to be, you know, your opponent's going to have the draw that they, you know, the absolute nut draw. This is the best card I could play, and mm-hmm. I got it the first five turns of the game and you're just dead, right? Yeah. Though that it's just, yeah, don't worry about those. But then there's, you know, there's other games where it's like, if I'd have made this or I was looking at this and I had two options and this is the path that I decided to go on. And this is the result that occurred as a result of it. And then if you think about, well, how would this have played out differently if I had gone that other path? Or, you know, what could I have, you know, what did I do that maybe I shouldn't have done? Or what did I do that, or what, you know, that sort of thing where you can just kind of start to look beyond just the RNG that of what card you drew when and what your opponent played, but what did you do and how did it affect the state of the game positively or negatively, you know, each and every turn all the way through to the end. I wasn't always thinking about that. And I think one of the cool things about streaming actually and about talking about what you're doing as you're doing it is you kind of force yourself into it, both as you're doing it and then at the end, after the game is over, you also potentially have people suggesting other things that you could have done or should have done. And then you can go, you know, there are tools where you can go back and look at the game at that turn and say, you know, what did this look like? What could I have done differently? That sort of thing. And I think that's once you start doing that, that's when I think a lot of the growth as a Hearthstone player can occur. And I think that's where, you know, where it sounds like you're at now, Rob.
Yeah, I think, well, because I decided to try and push a little bit this month, which I haven't done in a while. Like, I think that was kind of a thing for me too. I said, yeah, like, I want to get here. And then I got there and then I was like, oh, wow. And I've got a pretty solid deck. All right, I want to get here. And then I kind of committed to it a little more, and I committed to, rather than just being angry with losses, you know, trying to find out like, all right, what happened there? I could not have done anything any different. That sucks. Just move on. Or yeah, I dirty ratted there and that was so dumb. I should not have done that. What do you think, Daryl? Are you like casual enough where you don't care, or do you actually like go, man, I want to hit rank 15 this month?
Well, I'd like to do better in the game, and I need to find a way to do that without a ridiculous time sink. Like, I'm willing to put a little more time in than I currently am, but like I said, I can't do. I don't know how much you play Mage, but. I don't have the time to put in like even like 3 hours a day. I don't know if that's a lot or if that's a little. I have no idea what, like, you said it took you 372 games. How much time did you play to
those? Well, I would say a reasonable amount estimate would be about 10 minutes a game. So that's well over. Oh, my math sucks right now.
Lots.
That would be 62 hours in a month.
So that's still 2 hours a day. See, I don't.
Yeah, but like that's to get higher rank. Let's just say you want to get to rank 15 or rank 10. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to play 2 or 3 hours a day, right?
Right.
Just like, okay, like I know a lot of times, like when you're clearing out your quest log, you play whatever you need to play to get your quests done, right? Yep. And you and I will just trade off on that. But I would say like playing outside of your quests is also what kind of like gives you a little more of an edge, right?
Right.
Because then you're committing to saying like, I like this deck, I want to play this deck, I'm going to take it onto the ladder. I'm really going to consider what I'm doing. I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to rush myself. You know, even if I'm roping on turn three, I'm going to consider my turns and my options.
Well, think about it this way. If you were to say starting January 1st, you were going to play 4 games a day, 2 in the morning, two in the evening, you know, roughly 10 minutes a game. That's 20 minutes. That's 40 minutes a day, 4 games. You'd end up doing 120 games in a month. And I guarantee, you know, if you have a positive win rate over, you know, you win more than you lose, uh-huh, you're going to have 60, 65, you know, between 60 and 70 wins, probably. That's going to get you to rank 15, probably closer to rank 10. And that's really not that much of a time investment.
Right. All right. It's something.
It's, It's just a matter of finding how much time you have to spend, and then you know that you don't necessarily have to do it all in one session. You know, I think trying to find like when I did that many games in a day, I tried to do a handful of games throughout the day, and then I was doing, you know, I was trying to do at least 12 games a day, and so I was trying to do a few during the day, and then I was doing the rest in the evening.
Right.
And so whatever you need to do to break it up or find time in your schedule for it, I think you can find it. And maybe it's not even four, maybe it's three games, maybe it's two games, whatever. It's just play, you know, finding a deck and then just playing it and trying to play it more days than not is what you need to do to start progressing towards, you know, whatever your rank goal is going to be.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's something to think about anyway, and I might try and put a little more time in anyway. I do have one of my goals is to not let any quests drop off so that I'm not getting the gold, because I'd like to, you know, right, get as much as I can. I'm saving now. It took me 33 packs to get my last legendary, but I got it. So I've been saving since then. So I'm going to try and, you know, save until the next, just so I can have a good base for the next expansion. But on top of those, yeah, I know I need to put in a little more time.
The next expansion is going to be a lot more of an equalizer too, because that's when
Jade goes away.
The year ticks over and a lot of stuff falls off. So yeah. I haven't started saving yet. I decided to go for one more, and it's just taking forever now at this point because I'm not spending money. I'm basically just spending quest gold on packs. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, any other last tips, Mage, before we wrap it up here?
No, I don't know that there's anything in particular. I mean, obviously, I'd love to suggest that if you are interested in Hearthstone, whether you're, you know, newer or a little more experienced and are just trying to get a little bit better, that you come hang out with me and try and learn something there and that sort of thing. I think that's kind of I think watching people that are playing decks and explaining what they're doing is a pretty good way of getting familiar with a deck and is not a bad way to kind of advance your knowledge if you can't actually play the deck yourself or you're trying to decide if you want to play a deck.
Yeah, I agree. There's definitely even if I can't catch streams, there's a lot of my favorite streamers. I'll watch their YouTube videos and stuff, and I've learned a ton from that. Daryl, do you have any more questions?
I don't think so. Not tonight. We're already running a little late here. Like I'm sure we could continue this at another point in time. And it's I have more questions, but it's just gonna another time, definitely though.
All right. Yeah. Well, if you haven't already, make sure to come and join the official Training Dummies Discord server at discord.me/TTD. It is the best way to keep in touch and get real time interactions with us and our community, as well as the awesome guests like Major Death that you've heard here on the show tonight, or this morning, or wherever you're at. That's discord.me/TTD.
It seems fate has brought us together.
You have my gratitude.
We make a great team.
I'm sure glad you're around.
Well, if it ain't my favorite person.
You have your uses, don't you?
You have quite a talent there.
Together, our victory is assured.
Good enough.
Rob, shout outs this evening.
I'm going to keep it on the real. We're going to thank Jab for helping me run through some time walking stuff in WoW and get that knocked out. It's always easier when you take a friend, Jab and Justin for sure. Daryl for always being my bro host and setting up this show tonight. This is a great talk. And of course, Major Death, thank you so much for taking time out of your evening and your streaming and your family to come and hang out with us tonight. Daryl, what do you got?
Well, I'm going to big shout out to you. Since this is Hearthstone related, you're always willing to jump in Hearthstone and help me complete any quests, even the five wins of a certain class. And we've got it down to a science with the deck that you've created, the kill yourself deck on the Warlock one. That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. It's like turn four and under 3 minutes and a game is done and we're done, you know, 5 and 15 minutes. So a big shout out to you for that. That's a big help on getting me those quests done. And then of course, Major Death, I had a really good time this night talking about Hearthstone. And, you know, I'd like to have you on again at some point in the future to discuss Hearthstone again. You've given me a lot to think about for sure. So yeah, big shout out to you and thanks for joining us this evening. Mage Death, do you have any shout outs this evening?
I do. First, I got to give a shout out to you guys. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I've had an absolute blast tonight. This has been a lot of fun. I like Hearthstone, I love Hearthstone, I guess, and I love talking about it. And I am always always like talking to new people about Hearthstone and get their perspective and that sort of. I also would like to shout out my lovely wife Eve, who puts up with my constant talking about Hearthstone, and she's also one of the moderators on the Twitch channel. And so she is instrumental in both my personal life and my gaming life and that sort of thing. And I also want to shout out to all the wonderful Hearthstone community members that I met since I started streaming a year ago. And there's way, way too many of them to mention, but there's been so many people who I've talked to and have helped me along the way become a better Hearthstone player, help me start streaming, help me support the channel, and allowed me opportunities to get involved with the various gaming communities that we are in. So there's so many of those people. They're so awesome. Thank you to all of you.
Well, before we wrap this up, Major Death, where can people reach you if they have any other questions about this topic or anything else?
Sure. Well, the best place to find me Monday, Wednesday, Friday evening, 8 p.m. Central Time, is on Twitch, twitch.tv/mageadeath. That's when I'm streaming. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's @mageadeath there as well. I usually tweet out how I'm doing on the ladder, and we talk about what we'll be doing the day of that night streaming. We've got a Discord as well, discord.me/majordeath. So if you were interested in furthering having a spot in Discord to chat about Hearthstone, you can chat about it there.
All right, well, that's it for episode 191 of The Training Dummies. You can find this and past episodes of the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and thetrainingdummies.com. And remember, we are all just jackasses with mics. So until next time.
It's advice you can trust from people you shouldn't.